Now, are all the traitors present? Let's get started, shall we?
From rags to riches.
I'm so sick of this.
Working like a dog and being treated worse.
Yorkshire to New York.
We're climbers, you and me.
A life dedicated to revenge.
Let's make this an occasion to remember.
A Woman of Substance on Channel 4. Stream now.
Most people live as they have unlimited time. They plan for the future. They postpone things that matter. They assume tomorrow will look like today. But sometimes life interrupts that illusion. A diagnosis, a moment, a piece of news that changes everything. Today's guest knows exactly what that feels like. Now, Barry Marr is a best-selling author, nationally syndicated columnist, and he's an international motivational speaker who has appeared on major networks, including CNN, CBS, and The Today Show. But one of the most powerful chapters in his life actually began when something no one ever wants to hear, a brain cancer diagnosis. Barry, let's start here. I just want to get into Gundo. And you know what? I this is a very emotional topic too, because my grandfather suffered from brain cancer and it was a trying time for him. And so, you know, what was the moment like when you heard those words?
Well, it was one of those things. I don't want to say it snuck up on me, but I was going along. I was living my life. I was doing just fine. I was speaking on an Asian cruise, on a leg of a world cruise, which is a pretty good gig. In December, there's not a lot of speaking gigs. So I would always speak for the cruise lines and go to Hawaii or go to Asia or someplace. And at one point, I wanted to see how much time I had left in the session. And I snuck a peek over at the clock and I couldn't figure out what the hands of the clock meant, which was kind of weird, especially because I'd been having trouble figuring out foreign currency for basically the whole cruise.
Right.
And we got to Vietnam. A woman there was selling a baseball cap. She wanted $7 American for it. I gave her two hundreds and a 10. So before I ever went to the doctor, I knew something was wrong. I just didn't know what. I mean, really what I thought I was becoming senile. My parents both had Alzheimer's or dementia. They weren't sure what. And I figured that was happening to me at a young age, much too young. But finally, what I did, and my wife's insisted I go to the doctor. I went to the doctor. The first thing he did was have me draw a clock face, 10 minutes to three. Second thing he did was take away my driver's license. Sent me down for an immediate MRI. The woman there, she wouldn't let me know what the results were. She wasn't allowed to talk about the results. But when I said, where's the closest restroom? She said, I can't let you go in there alone. This is not something you want to hear from a medical person, right? I tried to point out that restroom visitation had always been one of my real skills. She said, yeah, like telling time, you need to talk to your neurosurgeon. I have a neurosurgeon. Wonderful. Neurosurgeon showed up, explained that I had a brain tumor the size of a basketball. Or maybe he said baseball. I wasn't tracking real well at that point. But what became really clear was he wanted to take some kind of a power saw, cut open the side of my skull, and carve out this brain tumor. Suddenly telling time didn't seem nearly as important at all, right? I mean, you can always get a digital watch. So that's how this thing hit me. At that time, they didn't know it was cancer. They assumed it was cancer. They were right, but I didn't know it at that point.
Right. Wow. When people receive life-challenging news, like a cancer diagnosis, time suddenly feels very different. What went through your mind in those early days?
You know, it was almost a unique experience. I got very, very calm. Basically, when the nurse told me, you know, I won't let you use the restroom alone, I mean, then I knew this is a very, very serious thing. Won't let you use the restroom alone. And I basically wrote myself off. I said, okay, everything from here is all gravy. And I've been through serious illnesses before. I had a kidney removed when I was very young. Yes. So apparently the way I react to this kind of news is, okay, let's make the best of what we got left.
Right.
And I was really figuring that I probably would go in for an operation and wouldn't make it out of the operation.
Yeah. Wow. You know, did it change how you thought about your life and your priorities in life?
And my what in life?
Did it change your thought about your life and the priorities in your life? Like, what was important? Because sometimes people, we think this is important, we think that's important, but then when we're faced with, a diagnosis as serious as cancer, your priorities in life, the way you think in life, things you once thought were important are no longer important to you. Like, how did your life, your thoughts, your priorities, how did it all change for you after that
Changed
happened?
everything. It changed absolutely everything. I was going along. I'd had a very good speaking career for 20 some odd years.
Yeah.
And I was happy. It's a good job. You talk in front of a room, everybody pays attention to you and
Right.
claps for you. And you're a little mini celebrity. And they'd send you all around the world. So it was a very good career, but I'd always really wanted to be a writer. I almost got into speaking by accident. And while I was speaking, I wrote nonfiction, because that helped promote the business. And everything was geared towards promoting the speaking business. All of a sudden, that wasn't important anymore. All of a sudden, I decided I wanted to do what I wanted to do.
Right.
And strangely enough, bizarrely enough, while I was having this surgery, while they were cutting open my brain, I mean, maybe I had a seizure. They weren't sure what. They weren't sure if I had a seizure or not. But I woke up with a couple of things. I had Lady Gaga singing in my head, same song over and over and over again. And I had this fully formed, horrific story, like a nightmare of something, or an experience of something that I just watched, fully formed
Right.
in my head. So I had this story. And it was a horror story, but it was a really, really interesting story. And at some point in the next couple of days, I thought, what I want to do with the rest of my life is I want to write this story. I want to turn it into the book that I think it should be. And I want to
Right.
be the writer that I think I should be. No longer writing nonfiction, although there's nothing wrong with nonfiction, but with writing fiction that talks to people, that tells people
Right.
the truth. And that's what I spent the next 2 years doing, because it was like the strangest gift I have ever had handed to me, but it was a gift and it was just there. And I had the chance to turn it into a book. And fortunately, I could afford to spend the time recovering and writing it. And that became my priority.
Wow. Now, a diagnosis like that doesn't just affect your body, it affects your mind. There's a fear of uncertainty and often a lot of questions like, how did you manage the mental side of facing something so serious like that?
I had help with the people around me to begin with. My brother, who has since died, was a diabetic. He'd been a diabetic all his life, and he dealt with this possibility of imminent death many times. And so one of the things we did was we looked up the diagnosis of once we found out it was cancer. Yeah, we looked up the diagnosis of this particular type of cancer, and it said basically, if you make it 5 years, you're doing pretty good. And where I was right then, 5 years for both of us seemed pretty good. I said, 5 years is not bad. And he said, yeah, I agree with you. I'll take 5 years. He didn't make 5 years. I did. And I'm doing, and the cancer's in remission. And who knows how much longer I'll live? Probably, hopefully, quite a while. But it puts things in perspective. It lets you know what's important. What was important was enjoying those 5 years when doing what I wanted to, was writing that book and getting it down, and fortunately living to see it published and see it pretty successful, pretty darn successful.
Oh, I love that. Now, what helped you keep perspective during that time?
Well, again, having a goal made a difference. There's got to be a reason you're alive. And when you face death, you realize pretty quickly that's why a lot of people become very depressed. They just curl up and they just wait for death to come by and hit them. I didn't at all. My thought was, I'm going to finish this book. I'm going to make it the best book I can possibly make it. I'm going to get it published. I'm going to promote it. I'm going to live as long as I can do it and get this book as far as I can get it. And fortunately, it's been come all this way. But that was my priority. I had a goal. And I enjoyed every minute of doing it. If at one point I hadn't enjoyed it, I would have stopped. I would have said, well, who knows how much time I got left. I'm going to enjoy it. I was enjoying it. When I first started writing, writing was very difficult. It was work, writing nonfiction. Writing for me now isn't difficult. It's my job. It's my hobby. I'd rather do it than almost anything else.
Yeah.
And I think it makes a difference in the result.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for 100%. Now, out of that experience came your novel, The Great Dick and the Dysfunctional Demon. That's a fascinating creative response to something so serious. Like, what inspired you to write it?
Well, again, I woke up from surgery. I had Lady Gaga and I had that story. And it just seemed like such a perfect story to explain a lot of the things that happened to us. I mean, it sounds like a frivolous title, The Great Dick. The Great Dick is really a compilation of Moby Dick, which is a story about a giant whale, and The Great Gatsby, which is a story about tragic love. There's no tragic love in this book. There's no giant whale, but it is about someone's attempt to overcome a failure that threatens to define their life. Much like Moby Dick, much like Great Gatsby. No giant whale, no tragic love, a demon, a few dead bodies, open crypts, bizarre spells, sudden death, and the Ralph Lauren version of the Manson family. It's a much different book, but it tells that story of someone's desire to overcome a failure that's threatening to overcome their life. And many of us are dealing with failures in one way or another and have a way of dealing with them. So that's what it is. That's what, because if it's a combination in one sense of Moby Dick and The Great Gatsby, it should be called Moby Gatsby or possibly The Great Dick. The original subtitle from the book was a tale of terror for men and the women they hurt. So it has that sort of feeling to it, although we've changed the subtitle. I think it's a book, people have loved it so far, which makes me very happy. One of the things, you know, when you're writing something like this, I'm writing it to prove that, you know, there's life after brain cancer or any kind of cancer. I'm also writing it to prove to myself that my brain has come back, that there's something in there that I can do this kind of thing. And so we sent it out initially to 15 prominent authors and we got 15 raves back. And it was like, wow, I wasn't thinking, wow, I've done it. I was thinking, hey, my brain is back. You know, I can think, I can function, I can write. And I think I'm actually a better writer than before the experience. I think I'm a considerably better writer than before the experience.
You know, I think we all, like, when we look back at our writing, and then as time goes on, experiences, the things we learn, the practice of writing things over and over again, we do become better writers. We connect more with ourselves. And then if we're connected with ourselves, you know, writing becomes a whole different world. And the words we put on paper are completely different. Even speaking events too. It takes time, but it's that connection of going through things in life and then connecting with your inner self and then just putting it on paper or verbally saying it. Your writing does become better. It improves, you know, and it's a natural process. And you know, but one thing I wanted to ask you is, why was it so important for you personally to improve that there, you know, to prove to yourself that there was life after a cancer diagnosis?
Because I was still alive, pure and simple, because I was still alive. I mean, there's a couple of, as I say, some people, when they have this kind of thing happen to them, they withdraw. Oh, poor me. Oh, woe is me. I was thinking in terms of, hey, I got some time left. I'm going to do what I will, and I'm going to make the very, very most of it. And I'm still trying to do that. I'm still, you know, I'm still thinking every day, you know, what am I going to do today to make the most of today? And I really have to do that because the other alternative is you turn on the TV and you watch TV all day, every day.
Right.
That's what you're doing with your life. Please find something else to do.
Exactly. Exactly. And I see that so much as people get older, when they retire, they resort to that. And that's just, it's not a way to live your life. You know, find something that's going to bring joy in your life, you know, because like you said, we don't know what the next day may bring. We don't know what's ahead. And, you know, and happiness is so important, you know, doing the things that bring joy to us and joy to our heart, you know, is so important, you know. And I think when we go through like major things like yourself, you went through brain cancer, your life and your perspectives and what's important to you is completely different than what it was before that.
Completely different. I mean, I'm still a speaker. I speak occasionally, but the priority now is my writing. The priority now is relating to the people around me, is growing, is becoming a better person, is, you know, is that kind of thing. It's finding out that every day I'm doing something that's worthwhile, at least in my opinion, is very worthwhile.
Exactly. Now, you spent your career telling stories, first as a journalist, and then as a speaker, and now as an author. Why are stories such a powerful way to help people understand the difficult experiences?
Because it helps them actually go through that experience a little bit. I tell you exactly, if I tell you, well, I had brain cancer, oh, that's nice. I, you know, my uncle had brain cancer, this, that, the other thing. But if I describe some of the things that I went through, some of the feelings I went through, it's more relatable. And that's what stories do. They actually help you share that adventure, that journey.
Yes.
And it was an adventure. In a way, it really was an adventure. And again, I had it better than a lot of people. You know, I mean, my cancer didn't encroach upon my brain, so I was able to gain the ability to think clearly, as clearly as I ever thought, to work, to write. You know, that's not everybody gets that ability.
No, they don't. No, a lot of people, they lose that ability. You know, you were one of the very lucky ones.
I was one of the very lucky ones, and I need to remember that. My experience actually made me better. You know, in terms of it made me more tolerant, it made me more empathetic. I think it made me a bit wiser. It certainly made me a better writer. And it gave me the great dick and the dysfunctional demon. I mean, you know, it's the strangest gift I ever saw, I ever got, but it is quite a gift.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. Now, how can humor and storytelling help people deal with serious topics?
I think it helps people relate to what's going on. Humor is something that brings us together. If we're laughing with somebody as opposed to laughing at somebody, you know,
exactly,
we're sharing our mutual humanity, you know. Also, it's, in my sense, the humor in this book, and there's apparently a lot, or not apparently, there is a lot of humor definitely in the book. You know, my column is a humor column, and but the humor grows naturally out of the excitement, out of the adventure. I just stuck in a joke there, you know, take my wife, please, or something like that. That doesn't fit, doesn't make any sense. It wouldn't work. The humor grows naturally out of the characters and what they're going through, which meant that, you know, I had to go through it over and over to hone each scene, to make each scene as good as I could possibly make it. And the humor came out.
Right. Now, many people say that a major health scare changes how they live. Did your diagnosis shift your perspective on things like time, relationships, work, like what really matters?
Yeah, it did. I was living in Corona, California. Before that, I was living in up by Victorville because these were convenient for me. These were close to the airport. I could get to the airport and I could get any place in the world. Once I got that diagnosis, we moved back to Santa Barbara, which is a town that I lived in for years and I loved. But it was like, well, Corona's nice, but why am I living in Corona? I want to live in Santa Barbara. So we moved back here.
Now, what lessons did you take from that experience? Like, you know, did you wish more people could understand before a crisis forces them to think about it?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I would like is people to suddenly have that perspective. And I think most of us have at some point in our life. There's a Cheers episode I'll never forget where one of the characters, I think Norm, is threatened with death. And all of a sudden, everything is precious to him. Life is precious to him. You know, everything he sees, all the people he meets is so wonderful. And then 2 days later, 3 days later, it's all gone.
Right.
And I think we've all had this experience where we understand exactly how important this is. Maybe it's a death of somebody close to us. Maybe it's a health scare. Maybe it could be anything. But the problem is we don't keep it with us. One of the nice things about having a brain cancer diagnosis is it's always going to be with you.
Yeah.
One way or another. I never forget that. In fact, I'm going in for another MRI in a next week.
Right.
So it's not that I feel like I'm living under a threat. It's I feel that I'm living under a need to make the most out of every possible minute, which sounds like a cliche, but really is true. You know, I
No.
wouldn't have taken this interview with you if I didn't hear it. And congratulations about your nomination, by the way, for one of the top podcasts in New York City, right? If I didn't feel this was going to be a worthwhile podcast and talking with you wasn't going to be a worthwhile experience, I never would have taken it.
Right. You know, a lot of people go through hardship, and but not everyone turns those experiences into something meaningful. How did your journey through cancer like influence your me the message that you now share with your audiences around the world?
Well, I th mostly my sharing is coming through the novel, The Great Dick and the Dysfunctional Demon, which is a horror novel, but it's really a supernatural thriller.
Yeah.
Hopefully, everything I believe, everything I am is in that, which people are going to say they're going to find that very strange, because it starts out the character admits, the main character, the narrator, who is not
Yeah.
me, by the way, admits that he's an ass and basically sets about proving it for quite a bit of the novel. But I think if people go through that experience with them, with him, they're
Yeah.
gonna realize a few things about themselves too. I hope so.
Exactly.
And so the book is not, it's not preachy by any stretch of the imagination, but it's just somebody's journey, and it takes you on the journey with them, and that journey should have an effect on you.
Oh, most definitely, 100%. Now, for someone listening who might be going through a difficult time and a difficult moment in their life right now, what advice would you give them about staying hopeful and continuing to move forward in their life?
Well, I'm not much on advice or preachy, but I will tell you that the important thing is what's happening today. That's all we've got. I mean, it's a cliche again, but it's all we've got. If you've got one today, if you've got five todays, enjoy them. We're all here for a limited amount of time,
100%.
enjoy them. Yeah, we got to make the most out of every one of those minutes. Again, a cliche, but it's a cliche because it's true.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, you may think that you've got it really bad. I guarantee you there are many, many people that have it much, much worse than you do. And in
Right.
many ways, you're lucky, and you should take advantage of whatever luck it is that you've had. I know I'm incredibly lucky. My brain still works. I was able to write The Great Dick. People like it. I could have written that book and people would have hated it.
Yeah.
It would have made a difference, but it would have been harder to write the next one, that's for sure.
Exactly.
So many people have it worse than I do. Many, many, many people. On
Yeah.
shows like this, I say, I had brain cancer. Maybe I was in remission right now. Maybe I don't have it right now. It's hard to say whether you have it or not. One way or the other, a lot of people have always had it worse than I do. And I remember
Right.
just walking around that ward, and every person I passed was in worse shape than I was. And
Yeah.
every person I passed would have given anything to have been in the condition I was in.
Yes, 100%. Now you've spoken to audiences all over the world and you've appeared in major media outlets. Looking back at your career, what has speaking and connecting with people taught you about the human, let's say, with the human experience with others and resilience?
One of the things that happens when we're dealing with people is we tend to see it through our own eyes, which is the only way to see it. How did that person react to me? How did the other person react to me? One of the things that happens when you get a diagnosis like mine, I think, because it happened with me, and I think it would happen to almost any person that got that diagnosis, to a certain extent, you stop focusing on yourself because
Yeah.
that's taken care of. Okay, I've got 5 years left to live, maybe 3 years left to live, who knows? You
Right.
start focusing on other people and seeing what the heck they're going through. And that
Right.
changes everything. We all
Yeah.
tend to be very self-centered. We can't help it. That's who we are. We see the world through our own eyes. But if we look at the eyes, look through those eyes at other people and see what they're going through, it can really, really change how we relate to the entire world. And it
Oh.
also makes all those days we're living a whole lot nicer,
Yeah.
Most important thing in my life right now is my wife. And I always realized she was the most
Yeah.
important thing in my life. But now I really, really realize it. If I didn't have her when I was going through this, I never would have made it through this. If I didn't have my brother when I was going through this, I never would have made that if I didn't have the people around me. Sometimes they can be too supportive. I have a friend now who's going through a very hard time. And the first thing she had to do was to tell people to back off just a little bit, because everybody wanted to help. And she was being inundated. How are you doing? How's everything? And she just didn't want to be dealing with that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes there's a little bit of that. But if we relate to those people and we leave ourselves open to them, it changes everything. It really does. But they have to know when to back off too, like in this situation.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you with that. Yeah, I know that experience. It could be a little too much sometimes, even though they mean well, definitely, 100%.
And it's wonderful that they mean well. And that's one of the things I was telling people, you know, if you want to see how nice people are, tell them you've got a brain tumor. You know, I mean, my joke was I tell everybody I meet I have a brain tumor. I didn't. But if you tell people, hey, I've got a brain tumor, everybody is really nice.
Oh my goodness. Now when it comes to your book, can you tell us a little synopsis about the book, and can you share with people where they can find your book?
Certainly. They can find it at Amazon. They can go to my website, www.barrymaher.com, which is BarryMaher.com. So I'll tell you the setup of the story. It's 1982. Steve Rutkowski used to be a hero. Now he's just a failed songwriter, and he's running from the law. Mm-hmm. Worse, he's just killed a man, almost accidentally saving a woman from what seems to be the strongest, most bloodthirsty wino in California. Now, Steve should keep moving. He's running from the law, right? But the woman, Victoria, she's beyond stunning. Steve stays. And Victoria becomes just a part of a mystery that he can't begin to unravel. Even as the face of the man he just killed slowly, gradually appears in his arm, then slowly fades away. And what starts out as a gritty crime story spirals into what author David Moody called a wickedly funny, hot, sweaty, magic and murder-infused roller coaster. Complete with, as I said, open crypts, bizarre spells, strange deaths, and the Ralph Lauren version of the Manson family. Well, nothing is what it seems, and where Steve may well be the next victim. People like it. I have to say that for the book. It's won an award. It's up for another award. So hopefully in a while I'll be able to say it's won two awards with my damaged brain. Check it out. I can say check it out and see if you like it.
I love it. Now, before we go, if you could tell the audience three things from this conversation that you want them to remember, that they can walk away with, that could help them today make a positive impact on their life, what are three things you would like to share with the audience today?
Yeah, it's not about me. It's about you. If this relates, if you can relate to what I've been through, if it seems to make sense, that's good. And while it's also about you, it's also about the people around you. If you can focus on those people instead of focusing on yourself when you're dealing with them, it'll make you a lot less self-conscious. It'll make you a lot happier. And the third thing, real simple, enjoy every minute. Fourth thing, get a copy of my book, The Great Dick and the Dysfunction Demon.
I love it. You know, this has been an amazing conversation, Barry. I hope you'll come back on the show. I really would love to talk about a lot of different things, and not just what your cancer experience, but the emotions that you went through and how you overcame each of them, and maybe some theories and some strategies that you used to really help you get to the point where you are today, because you really rose above the crisis. You tackled your obstacles, and, you know, any dream that you had, you made, you know, a reality. You know, you turned a situation, and you took that situation and made it into a positive event where you can now help others. And I think that's so amazing. And it's all about what we're about here, you know. And I want listeners to remember that life, it has a way of reminding us that time is just precious. You know, Barry's story definitely shows that even the most difficult moments can lead to powerful new chapters in our life. That Barry, I just want to say thank you for sharing your story with us today. And, you know, your story, is definitely touching others who are listening today. And I think it's so important that people realize that they are not alone and that there is hope and that our lives are precious and that we have to make the most out of them and that anything could, if we, our mind is a powerful tool. And if we use our mind and we really, and we are determined to survive, we can survive and we can give back by sharing what we've learned to others. And that's what you did today. And I just want to say thank you. Just thank you for being you. Thank you for sharing your story with so many people, because people don't realize it's not always easy to share our stories, especially when there's a lot of emotion behind them and you've gone through so much. We can joke around, and I'm a jokeable person. I love to make jokes all the time, and I make jokes about my own disorder. But you've gone through a lot. You've gone through a lot of pain. You've gone through a lot of things, and you were able to turn it around. And you show people that there is hope, that there is, that we can take things in our life, we could turn our lives around, and we could actually move forward, and we can help others live a life of happiness, joy, and productivity, where they can live and really, really press, take every moment and make the best out of it. And you're a product of that. And I just want to say thank you so much for coming on the show and being you and sharing your story with all the millions of people out there.
Well, thank you for having me, and thank you for providing this outlet. And I would be delighted, I would be honored to come back anytime. And I can see why your show is up for that award.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you. And you have a wonderful day.
You too. Thank you very much.
Feel that? Yep. It's winter fading away and the warmth of spring making its way back. Welcome the new season with Etsy and discover loads of fresh finds. Like a bouquet of crocheted tulips that your partner can admire all spring, or maybe stickers and stencils to finally make that family scrapbook. From the personalized to the practical, we've got you covered with millions of active listings to choose from. Spring arrives tomorrow. Shop at Etsy.com and discover your perfect find today.